Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kaler-Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thank you for finally joining us for episode 40. And it's kind of weird being back in the seat, mate. I think it's been a month since we've done a podcast almost.
Withdrawal symptoms on high, Adam. It's great to be back in the seat. Yeah. It just feels good, doesn't it? We've missed this thing that breaks up the week. And I know I wrote a relatively lengthy reflection last week on the blog about the things that come up and crop up, because we've had a lot of questions, haven't we, over this year in 2015 about how do you manage to churn out an episode most weeks.
And we were lucky, weren't we? We kind of just went, you're ready to go this week, yep, no worries, and off we go. And then since it's almost as if we've had a bit of bad luck there, because someone's asked us, you know, that question of how do you do it, and we've gone, oh, we just get, you know, we're able to do it. And then the last 4 weeks, something's come up every single week, you know, that we just couldn't get around to get the podcast done.
And isn't it interesting, besides myself being quite unwell last week, the things that have come up are things that we do outside and above our regular job, isn't it?
Always.
Stuff that have required us to be outside of school hours in attendance.
Yeah, that's right.
On numerous occasions.
One of those times for you was camp. I was on camp last week as well. Yeah. We've had other things on that we've had to do, like you said, outside of those school hours that have impacted.
You've had school concerts. There's been late night meetings, year six debates.
Yep.
It's been pretty, I mean, as we said, term three, the quiet term, I don't think so.
Fat chance of that. It's the worst term of the lot, I reckon, now. But also, it was a good time for us in a way to reflect and go, you know what, something like the podcast is something we enjoy, but we still need to look after ourselves, and we still need to walk away and go, no, we still need those small gaps in our week to recharge the batteries. And we both said, you know, we love doing this so much, but at the same time, it was something we need to spend time with our family and spend time at home and do those sorts of things that we just couldn't miss out on.
And sometimes when you're that unwell, when the flu really gets you, Adam, you can go to the dark side. And I don't think our listeners want to listen to two regular teachers from the dark side.
No, we don't. We don't want to be the Dark Knight, Joker-esque, and that sort of stuff. I do want to bring up, before we get stuck into our topics for tonight, did you get your letter in the mail about your annual registration payment?
A Christmas card from an old friend, Adam, when the Victorian Institute of Teaching decide it's time to send you a letter and say hello for this year, and here's $91 bill.
Yeah, that's right, and it's like a bill that's attached to a bayonet that's gone through your neck. You know, that sort of it's kind of like you got it, but you didn't really want it. What I want to quickly bring up and to teach you there, obviously this year's fee was $91. I also like the fact that if you don't pay by the 30th of September, they'll chuck on an extra $30 or $35. I think it's up to like $140, $135.
There must be some serious admin costs at the VIT.
Getting those letters out must be tough, and getting those cards chopped up and sent out must take a lot of manpower. My quick question is, where does that $91 go? Because I actually tried to look it up. I typed it into Google and tried to look it up, and all I really got back was it's just to keep your status as a Victorian teacher active. That's it. That's all I got out of it. Now, I could have looked in the wrong place, but that's all I got out of it.
We've talked about it in a prior podcast, I know, and you can find it on the blog if you go searching. But yeah, look, I've even asked a principal this once, Adam, and they kind of shook their head and went, it was kind of, with all due respect, if anyone's listening from there, but I just think all they do is just give us a card and make us pay money.
Yeah, and that's right. And why couldn't they give us the feedback? The money that you pay goes towards these sorts of things. Give us that feedback. Otherwise, I feel like I'm paying $90 for something I should really be getting for free. I've done my 4 years of uni. I work my backside off all year. Why do then, to still be a teacher, I have to pay $91? It kind of doesn't make any sense to me.
And for the criminal record check that you have every 5 years or so, you pay extra for that.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Well, you got to go and do that yourself and send it off. Yeah. I don't know why they couldn't do that. Is that not allowed?
Well, maybe not.
Maybe not. Anyway.
Maybe they run out of admin costs and people there when it gets to that bit, Adam.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't know. But next year, I'm thinking of actually sending my $91 as 5 cent coins in a big bag and sending that along and getting them to do that.
Well, there is a postal address on the website. I really think you should do it.
And it's real life math, so they can sit down and actually count it out and put it out and do that sort of stuff. So
we'll put the photo on the blog when it happens.
But anyway, we've got some really good topics. We're really excited to get into it, mate. So let's go.
Let's get into it.
So, mate, something we've wanted to talk about actually for a few weeks as our first topic was, recently, the NAP plan results have come back. You know, the NAP plan was conducted in early May, and we've got the results, you know, towards the end of August, which I think is a little bit earlier than what it normally is. It links into the idea that the Andrews government wants to link NAP plan results to school funding. Now, this got me going straight away because, again, I thought, NAP plan, they're putting so much things on NAP plan. And it seemed a little bit outrageous to me at the start that a test for year 3 and 5 kids during 1 week of the school year is the basis for the schools that get funding. Now, to me, that seems very, very shallow. I might be wrong, and I might be playing it from the wrong side here, but it seems very shallow to base schools' entire funding on a test that's conducted over a couple of days.
Well, I absolutely see your point. But I guess I think we have to acknowledge the fact that there's not, and we've said this before, there's not many other diagnostic tools out there that do a whole, can give a whole school picture like the national testing can. And the article that you picked up on from The Age that you shot into our planner during the week was that says that the education minister, the Victorian education minister, in the proposal about funding, it says that they are looking at outlining mechanisms to better target school funding to need, and NAPLAN results being one of the options.
Yeah.
It is, on its face value, it is shallow. I agree with you. But the article mentions that it would be, if they went with that model, it would be looking at disadvantage. So possibly low NAPLAN scores in disadvantaged areas possibly would get extra funding. Now, you kind of can't argue against that.
No, I agree. I can't argue against that. The problem I see with that, though, is it still leaves things open for schools. Now, if schools are kind of around about the mark, does it leave it open for schools to kind of go, you know what, if we just drop our scores a little bit here, we can get that extra $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever it is they're offering to finish off that gym we need, or to put it into this to make our school look fantastic at the detriment of these scores? Now, the principals could easily talk to the school and the community about, you know, there's no importance on these results, and all of a sudden, they're $100,000 richer simply because they've been able to twist the test to suit the NAPLAN. And that sounds really quite almost evil in terms of what it can do. But because it's so competitive to get this money and everything that goes on, there are probably schools that may have to resort to that to actually be recognised and noticed to get some money to improve the quality of their school and their teaching.
Perhaps, yeah, for sure. There's a lot of experts who are quoted in the article and kind of supporting the idea, saying that it might be worth pursuing. Again, I say that do the government have other forms of data that would really help them pick? I mean, obviously this government has put a lot of pressure on itself by coming out and saying education is number one for us. So this is big for them because they have said that they're going to fund the final 3 years of Gonski more so than what the coalition government did, although they are arguing that the coalition government,
as they always do.
But so the pressure is on because I think a lot of leadership, I know after talking to some of the leadership in our school earlier in the year, I think a lot of principals and that in schools at the moment are feeling a little bit like there was lots of promises from the new Labor government, and yet not much yet has really happened in terms of big decisions, except maybe the number plate with the new education
state. Yeah, spent some good money on that.
But I mean, I'm being a bit facetious, but I don't think there's been anything big yet.
No, but it's always the way, is it? There's always big promises, and then you kind of get a year or two into their reign, so to speak, and then you kind of sit back and go, well, what have they actually done? Not a lot. So it leaves a lot to be desired. And this, I mean, while this idea has, like you said, has its merits, it's got some, there are positive aspects of it. It still is filled with holes. And like I said, it seems very simplistic and very shallow.
Well, it's interesting you said before that because there was that Julie Podbury, who's from the Australian Principals Federation, said that if the plan went ahead to base funding on NAPLAN results, it should take into account the fact that some students with disabilities and from non-English speaking backgrounds don't sit NAPLAN. And if you look at the other side of the coin, and this is a bit extreme, but it's happened in some schools, will some of those students now, maybe ones with disabilities, be encouraged to sit the test instead of being opted out because it might make the results worse?
And that's what I meant before as well about them wanting to almost find that loophole to get around and go, well, we might just be able to bring our results just down a little bit, and all of a sudden we've got this funding. To me, though, why can't they go and visit schools? Why can't they just go out to schools and actually go, gee, have a look at this block here over here that's just falling down. We want to give you guys some money to really refurbish, these 3-4 classrooms and repaint them and redo these things. Why can't they actually just go out there and see the schools and talk to the schools and see the areas and go away and, do sort of sections every year? So there might be an area that's 1 year, an area the next year, and actually give out the money to the schools that need it in the areas they need it the most, rather than getting a NAPLAN test and going, well, that school can have this, that school will have that, where they may not actually really need the money.
Well, you'd like to think that they would use a range of research and tools to help make the funding decision, wouldn't
you? Hope,
so
you'd
it
hope.
Might be on-site visits, like you just described. It could be NAPLAN. It could be also the school review results. Our school's in the middle of the school review at the moment and making our vision for the next 3 years. And obviously, you know, lots of kind of like census data gets collected for those, doesn't
it?
Like
it does, to look at the
demographics,
the job and the demographic
socioeconomic
stuff,
status and that. So, you look at, the article doesn't say that it would be based purely on NAPLAN, but we'd like to think that it isn't. But interesting, just going back to the beginning of the segment, you said about NAPLAN results have just come out, but I don't think they've yet gone to families. In the past, that hasn't happened till October.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get there. I don't understand why. Can you tell me why?
I've got a feeling it's being brought forward a little bit because there has been concern from schools. No, I don't know why. I always assumed it was purely a logistical thing with the amount of data and admin they have to do to get all this, all these sheets, you know, designed and sent to schools.
True, but couldn't they? I mean, couldn't the $91 we pay every year go towards fixing something like this up? Because really, the longer it takes to get to the parents, the less relevant the results are, because the results end up being 5 months old, and the parents can come and go, oh, gee, their maths was a little bit low, and you can go, well, that was May, actually now it's September, I've got the data here to show you that they've actually come along in leaps and bounds, so that result you've got in your hand actually is not relevant at all.
My first year of teaching, I recall a parent coming in really concerned because the national testing results went home, and this particular girl's, year six girl's writing results were quite down, whereas I had marked her higher than that on her school report, and the mother was really worried, and I had to explain that this was remember this test was a long time ago, May, this is a result I'm giving her late in the year. So there's all those things. So, you know, we'd like to, get in touch with us if you've had your staff NAPLAN results reflection meeting, as a lot of schools have in the last week or so, looking at the results, and they can be quite dry, but I guess there is always room for celebration. We have to acknowledge that, and sometimes room for improvement, obviously.
Yes.
Get
in touch with us, because NAPLAN for me, NAPLAN's always going to be a sticking point for me, because I always think that the government puts too much emphasis, and you're right, Rick, off the top in saying that we really don't have anything else to judge schools by. We really don't. But that begs the question for me in saying we should be looking at it in a positive manner in terms of how can we make this better, and so these results are much more reflective of how a school is going. So it's always going to be a sticking point for me, but we'd love to hear your feedback on NAPLAN and its linking to funding.
Adam, for the second topic, I want to touch on social media, which we in a certain light. A few weeks back, and on one of the weeks when we couldn't do a podcast, I took our Year 6 debating team out to the grammar school in Geelong, and the topic that they had to research in the lead up to the debate was social media does more harm than good. And it tied really nicely into an article that was shared on Twitter called Why Educators Should Use Social Media in the Classroom. Now, the students, the Year 6 students, came up with some fantastic arguments for this debate. Now, all I do as a coach, debating coach, is kind of help them structure and make sure they're not saying anything too outlandish. But look, these kids were coming up with arguments in support of and also arguing against young children's digital footprint, and they were using all this great language, and it just goes to show how much they're getting from social media, from their use at home, some of their use at school, but clearly from all just forms of social media and television and maybe older siblings. Amazing stuff. Look, the article was from the Teacher Solutions website and written by Karen Cornelius. And she advocates teachers getting more familiar with social media, getting online, having an account, seeing what the kids are using. Now, you and I, we're past this. We're both online. We're both using it. What she really talked about was helping kids have a form of digital citizenship. Now, you and I have talked about that a lot on podcasts.
Yeah.
Another article I'm going to put up with the blog is actually a story from the 7:30 program about a father who's been going out doing speeches in high schools about cyberbullying and cyber safety after his 18-year-old daughter committed suicide after being cyberbullied. Now, powerful stuff. I really advise you to go and have a look at it. Because I think we have to talk about cyber safety as part of this digital citizenship stuff.
And I love the topic of the debate, because the idea of social media does more harm than good. I actually think students, 13, 14, 12-year-old students, would argue that it does more good than harm. But I reckon there'd be a lot of parents who'd be on the flip side that say it does more harm than good. And we need to find with social media that happy medium where they can both meet in the middle and understand that there are such positive things about it, but also understand the harm that it can cause and the way that they can structure their use so that that harm is kept to a minimum.
Yeah, we need massive community buy-in, schools do. I think our school's doing some good stuff. It could still do more in how to build your digital citizenship, but there needs to be more help from the community, particularly parents. The article's a good one, but it doesn't mention the restrictions that are in place in schools, nor any examples of how some teachers are using social media with their students now. And I think of Edmodo, being a big Edmodo user. With Edmodo, we're trying to give kids an idea of what digital citizenship means. Mm. But clearly, and I'm learning this more this year, teaching year six, Instagram, I think, is a fantastic tool. I love it.
Yeah.
But I think, clearly, a lot of my students are on Instagram. And it's kids that, and a lot of these kids, their parents don't really seem to know much about it.
Mm.
These kids are not using Instagram so much for photography and sharing photography. Mm. It's a place to write comments and have conversations.
And they kind of pull the wool over their parents' eyes because the parents see them taking photos. Oh, I'm sticking photos on Instagram and things like that. They don't understand that they can then go and... They can literally, really follow anyone as long as it's accepted, but there are a lot of people out there they can just follow. So there's bad things out there, but they can just leave comments left, right, and centre. And the parents don't know because they think, oh, that Instagram, oh, they're always taking photos. Well, like you say, it's probably 50% photos, 50% the social side of it, where they're commenting and actually being quite mean and rude to other people as well.
Well, instead of a comment, it's a whole list of conversation.
Mm.
And I've dealt with some friendship issues over the past month in our cohort that we've managed quite well at school. But in the background, there's this ongoing dialogue between the students on Instagram, and that is where a lot of these problems that I've been dealing with are festering.
Yes,
because. And I've talked, one of the things we talk about with the kids is that on this part of social media, there's no tone, there's no volume.
No.
We talked about this before.
Yep.
We have to take a big part as teachers. And I use my own experiences a lot. I talk about what the kids know what social media I'm on.
Mm.
They know that I'm private, but they know what I'm on. And I think what, getting back to Cornelius, I think what she's suggesting is absolutely right. And I know some teachers who are like, I'm not getting on this stuff. I don't care.
Yep.
I think as teachers, we have an obligation to be familiar with it now. Yep. I just think you really need to get on and at least have a play around.
It's the future. I've got two questions for you.
Well, it's here. It's not the future.
Well, that's right. It's the future. But it's going to continue to be the future as well. I've got two questions for you from what you said there. Number one, when the kids have those problems at home, so they've got the problems at Instagram and those sorts of things, is it our responsibility to deal with that? In your opinion, do you think it's our responsibility to have to deal with that?
Not to deal with that issue, but I think if it starts infiltrating at school, like in terms of if it's affecting friendships, we need to step in and help how at school. But I have mentioned to a parent this year, I put it back and said, the student has told me that there's stuff going on Instagram. I think you need to look into this if you haven't, with all respect.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that's important because, like I said, if it does spill over to school, but if it's happening at home, then they should be dealing with it. Last quick question I want to ask you, though. Should schools take a big deep breath, take a risk, take a jump, and start to introduce a few of these other social media aspects in some form into school to begin to teach the students more about how they can use it effectively?
Well, I think some are, and I'd like to hear some examples if people are listening. We know that some schools are using Twitter, but the teacher's still in charge, like maybe having their classroom Twitter handle. I think Instagram is being used with school hashtags and things like that.
Yep.
Great stuff. So I'd like to see some more examples. But my question, well, I'm going to finish with too, to you, but it's more just rhetorical.
Yep.
How can we break down the gap in digital citizenship between how a tool like Edmodo is used at school and as opposed to a tool like Instagram that's used in the kids' own time? There's still a hole there.
And that's the thing, it's a hole. And I can't answer that question. So it almost needs to be, we want to rephrase it tonight in the sense that, how are you out there as a teacher, if you're out there, breaking down that gap? Have you actually made the attempt or broken that down? We'd really love to hear about it because it's something we want to talk more about and introduce more into our classrooms.
Hashtag tough question. For the third topic tonight, Adam, you shared an article during the week from Mindshift, KQ Ed News. Good website, this. And the heading was, "What do students lose by being perfect? Valuable failure. great picture on there too, about failure. If you go and have a look, we'll put it on the blog. And it made me think of all the risk-taking conversations we had back at the Digicon episode. Yep. Failure. I mean, schools are really... A lot of primary schools I know, I can't speak of secondary, are picking up on mistakes are welcome. That's one of the mantras at our school.
Yep.
And I really can't speak highly enough for kids experiencing failure and realising that it's okay.
Yeah, and they need to realise it's okay, that making a mistake is not a bad thing. It's actually finding a way that something didn't work. And we need to encourage that, because I think failure breeds problem solving. Okay, that didn't work. I need to go back to the drawing board and have another go. So not only is it that problem solving, but it's that resilience, it's that willingness to have another go that, okay, it's failed once. I've got to look at it in my team. Have I got a small group? Am I doing it myself? What's a different way that I can do it to get it right? Rather than we coax them and we do this stuff and we give them the answer and we do all these things, they don't learn as much as far as I'm concerned. If they're getting out there and trying things and failing and going back to the drawing board, it's so much more powerful than just, you know, almost spoon feeding them things all the time.
I think there are, I mean, we can't speak for all parents, but, and we can't speak for all, like some of the data in this article comes from the States, but there is some research that suggests that a lot of kids are getting into college, and I guess for our comparison it would be university, with this kind of hypersensitivity to failure, being quite stressed and wanting results straight away. And the research suggested that's their families. They're coming from parents where there's the pressure to not fail.
Yep.
And I've mentioned in podcasts before, over the years, I've had parents kind of say to kids, if you can get an A on your report, if you can be above expected level, there'll be, you know, a gift in there or some kind of reward. And like I've said this many times before, a kid can try their absolute best in our system at the moment, but they still might be below expected level because that's just their makeup.
And the focus, I think, from parents needs to go away from the letter to the wording. Go to the report and actually look for some of those keywords, you know, works hard, you know, shows resilience, never gives up, team player, all these sorts of things that suggest that regardless of the result they got, they are giving their absolute best. And that's what we need to encourage out of the kids. It doesn't matter if you get 10 out of 10 or 1 out of 10. If you're giving your absolute best, then we can be proud of you, because you will find your spot. You will find what you're passionate about. You will find what you're good at. And if you've already got the ability to put in 110% into that, then you will be successful. So go and have a look at that report and go, look, I'm going to get you this gift if I see some of these words, or I can go and speak to your teacher on, you know, parent-teacher interview night or student-led conference, and I see them using these words, you know, this about you and describing who you are, then that's what you're going to get. It's not going to be based on that A, B, C, or D. It's going to be based on that word that I get back from the teacher.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really fair call. There's a book mentioned in the article by a parent and educator called Jessica Lay, and the book's called The Gift of Failure. And Lay says that she tells parents and teachers a lot to back off. That's kind of how she describes it. Back off from your kids. Failure will be messy, but let it be messy. I like how she says, stop bringing forgotten homework to school. Parents have done that before.
Yeah.
Let the failure be messy, because that helps cope with the ups and downs of life.
Yeah.
Well, you and I, we still have moments where you feel like everything's a mess. You have failed. And yeah, sure, it can get you down. It gets some people more down than others, depending on how you deal with things. I have my downtrodden time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But you know that there is a rise up there somewhere, because that's how life works.
Yeah, that's right. And you are spot on, because it sets them up for life. And one article I read a long time ago was about relationships and actually encouraging your kids to, if they have a relationship with a girl at 13 or 14, or a boy or whoever it is at 13 or 14, and there's that breakup, it's actually a really good thing. They need to develop these resiliencies. They need to develop the ability to go, look, obviously I failed at something, and learning from it and doing things, because it comes back to those, you know, sporting clubs these days. I remember when I was a sporting club, when I played cricket as a junior, there was a bowling award, a batting award, and a coach's award. That was it. So if you didn't get one of those awards, you might have got a little certificate or something. That was it. Nowadays, what happens, mate? What happens?
Now we know that everyone, there's a lot of those participation awards.
Yeah, participation, everyone gets a trophy and all this sort of stuff. No. I know that's a sticking point, but it's a big thing that we've got to encourage them to fail. So
yeah, Lay talks about long-term goals being more important. So in case of, she goes, in the case of a test or an exam or a quiz, short-term goal is getting an A or a good mark. But the long-term goal of self-sufficiency eclipses that. And I think that's something to strive for. We talk about problem-solving skills, all that sort of stuff. That's what we want kids. That's so much more important, isn't it? In my eyes.
Anecdote, do, 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 do. It's anecdote, do, 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 do. It's anecdote. Well, mate, I had to bring it back. We've been away for a long time. It's anecdote time.
It is anecdote time, but look, listeners, don't encourage him with that. Otherwise, there'll be a jingle every week.
Yeah, I couldn't help it. I'm so excited. What can I do?
Well, I've been holding on to this anecdote, Adam, because the last time we were supposed to do an episode, it was the week after I'd been on a week-long camp. What's nice about tonight's anecdote is that you've been on a camp in the past week, so we've got something. I just want to talk about camp, and I want to talk about the things that happen. And can I just, like, I'll just paint a little picture. Week-long camp I had to go on, middle of winter, five-hour drive up to the mountains. First night, had to end up, and I won't go into the details for privacy reasons, but had to take a student to hospital who was really unwell. He's okay, by the way. What a night. Like,
that's just
unbelievable. Colleague and I shared shifts at the hospital, no sleep. I mean, these the things that parents, like, not parents, but the community don't know that go on. Emergency, like, we had to make a call on calling ambulances. Wow. We had to work out what's actually wrong with him, like, do we know? But it all began with the good old classic camp vomit, Adam.
Yes.
At 1 a.m., this is when I thought, is this worth... I had a moment when I thought, I'm not getting paid right now.
Yeah.
When I was on all fours in a room with one of the young boys, who was actually quite supportive in there, but giving a bit of running commentary because he wasn't sleeping, of me on all fours with a garbage bag and gloves on, picking up spew.
Oh, jeez.
I hope no one's eating breakfast listening to that.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's just... But that's camp all over, isn't it? I reckon there's almost one spew a camp.
Oh. And do you know what was funny, though? The camp owners... one of my colleagues who's kind of running the camp, I suggested, look, there's got to be another cabin we can get these other boys into for the rest of the week. But he wasn't quite keen on that. And so it never really, we never asked the camp owners whether they could move into a new cabin. So you can imagine, even though it was disinfected, that room by Friday smelled, diabolical.
And let's be honest, the boys' cabin on camp, within 5 minutes, smells like dirty socks and fart inside about 5 minutes. Because I'll get in there and you go and walk in there. How's it all going, boys? Ah, jeez. You know, it just stinks.
It's
so
shocking.
To put vomit and disinfectant, like old disinfectant into the mix, that's just I can't even imagine.
Took one for the team there, Adam.
You absolutely did.
So I spent some time in the hospital with that poor lad, and as I said, he's better now. But just the whole like run of the mill, and I always laugh, you know, maybe, let's hope they're not listening. But when you go on adventure camps, the hero instructors who run the adventure activities, you know, who come up, you know, g'day, run, you know, and the kids love them, and they wash their hands of all the big duties that they've got to do in terms of behaviour.
You can just come over here and can I just get you to do this for me and that sort of stuff, and then they're too busy, got a kid hanging off them and stuff. They don't want to get their hands dirty.
And you know, I never get a comeuppance on them, Adam. And, you know, one thing that I got nailed with at this camp. I know there'll be a lot of teachers who know this. When you go on adventure camps, trying to help the kids with all their straps when they're going on the high ropes and things, I can't work out. I can't even get that thing on. And I hate it when the instructor passes you on and says, come on, you're going up too. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I don't even know where to step.
And the kids are all watching you. They're watching and wonder if Mr. KT knows what he's doing. Mr. KT doesn't know what he's doing.
And you're getting a giant wedgie from it as well. You know? It's shocking.
It is bloody shocking. But you are, you're left with that stuff. Because we're not taught how to do that. Hand it over, you got to do this. Or the bike. The bike's one of the, I find hardest, but you got to get the helmet. You've got to get all the helmets that fit heads, and then is the seat up high enough or low enough, and then they've got the kid who just falls over all the time and stuff. It's unbelievable.
And then there's all the people who work in the camp kitchens, and God bless them. Laugh at this. There was one camp I went on many years ago, Adam, and myself and the other staff dubbed this kitchen hand the smiling assassin. He was this kind of bloke in his mid-40s. And he'd walk into the dining hall, and there he'd be standing very straight with his brand new white apron on, cap on, and he'd just have this big cheesy grin, and he'd just be looking. And we called him the smiling assassin because I said, that's the kind of guy who kills in the night. There was something.
Just judged him quickly.
If there's any listeners from old school, they will know what I'm talking about.
But the dinners, how picky do the kids get with the dinners too? And I know the camp we recently went on last week, we had a meal which had rice, had some sort of meat in there, a little bit of sauce on top, all these things. The amount of kids who went, oh, I didn't really like that. It was the most basic meal. It was actually really nourishing. Didn't want to eat it. Oh, I don't like this bit of sauce. Oh, it's a bit too much rice. Are you kidding me?
You really learn.
It really annoys me.
On a primary school camp, you really learn about what kind of skills are being taught at home, don't you? About the dinner table. Yep. We had some kids that were holding their fork with a fist, kind of like, you know, like almost like caveman style.
Well, can I interject there? Because I know you've got a good story to finish with. But speaking of those eating ones, when I went to Belmont for a couple of years, if any of those guys are listening, they'll know. I went on a camp where a grade 6 kid got a bowl of spaghetti, didn't use a knife or fork, he ate it with his hands, picked it up with his hands and put it in his mouth, and then wiped his mouth with the underside of his shirt. Now, we were all sitting there trying to eat ours and then watching him from afar going, look, he's going for the hands again. Oh, this is unbelievable. It was unreal. He's in grade 6 but didn't know to use a knife and fork. He just used his hands.
I mean, of all foods, Adam. I mean, even if it was a chicken schnitzel, you could still, okay, he's picking it up like, you know.
A bit like a sandwich.
Bolognese, unbelievable.
You twist it around your fork. That's what it's there for.
Oh, that is phenomenal. Well, I want to finish off with a little tale about a past camp from many years ago, Adam, because teachers always say that even the most difficult kids come alive at camp, and that's mostly true. Mm. The kids that don't enjoy being in the classroom, they're not academic, but camp, you never really hear a peep out of them. They're fantastic, easy to manage. And we had this one student I just want to regale you with. Back, this is many years ago at the old school, we had a student who came in quite late to the year, and his family background was really tough. And I won't go into all the details, but there was kind of bikey clans involved and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. You know, just the stuff that this kid must have seen, he was in year 5, was just beyond even my reckoning. Mm. And he was ADHD, and he had a lot of issues, but there was something kind of likeable about him. Mm. And we went to Sovereign Hill Camp for those...
Great camp.
Yeah, for those international listeners, kind of a... It's an old school gold mining replica town, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And you can stay on site.
Buy raspberry drops and things like that.
That's right, yes, yeah. And so anyway, we took this kid, and there was a little bit of trepidation amongst the staff. Mm. How is this student going to go over 3 days?
That's fair enough.
Because he always gets to go home, and we think, you know, what's he going to be like? And we were getting lots of comments on the first night from his cabin boys saying he just will not sleep. He's jumping on the beds, he's somersaulting, you know, it's unbelievable. Like, it would not stop. And this is a kid that didn't understand his own behaviour. So by about, on the second night, I think it was, by about midnight, there'd been complaints from the boys in his cabin again. And I thought things had gone quiet, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was doing the night shift, and I said, I'll go and check on, on this boy, on the cabin. I thought it was quiet. Mm. Just as I've got near the door, one of the other boys has come out and gone, Mr. KT, so-and-so, he's doing it again. And he looked really tired. I thought, God, just when I thought things were good. Yeah. I've walked in at him. Mm. This boy was standing, he was out of bed, standing on the carpet, with his back to the doorway, so with his back to me. It was pitch black. Yeah. He clearly had his torch in his mouth, because there was a light shining from his head downwards. Yeah. He had his back to me at it. Yeah. His hands were in front of him, kind of at midriff, kind of like the stance that men have when they're standing at a urinal in a toilet. Yeah. So you can imagine, okay, so torch in hand, pointing downwards, hand around that area. So my thinking is, all right, his pants are down, something, okay, get ready for this.
Yep.
He's turned towards me. Do you know what he was doing?
What was he doing?
He was peeling a banana. He goes, Mr. KT, I was hungry. One of the greatest moments on camp I've ever had, Adam. I mean, the things that I was imagining I was about to see, the kids are seeing, he was innocently peeling a banana, using the torch in the mouth so he could see what he was doing. So there you go.
That is the greatest, that's the best anecdote I think I've ever heard. That takes the cake. That is unreal.
So we'd love to hear from you. I mean, for sure, people from both primary and secondary have great camp anecdotes. Please share one. Please do it. And I'm sure that in future podcasts, we'll always touch back on camp.
So, Rick, so ends episode 40. It's great to be back in the chair. And we do have to say for next week, though, that next week will be our final episode for the term. And we are on the lookout for a guest to join us for that last episode.
Well, it's usually what we do, isn't it? We have a guest for the end of term, and happy 40th, might I say. Happy 40th episode to us.
Yes, you too, mate.
But if you're interested and you have contact and you're available, get in touch with us. It isn't the final week of term next week for Victorian teachers, but one of us is on leave in the final week. That's myself. So we thought we'd finish up things up next week. And we hope To be back and better and doing it weekly in term four, which I'm sure we will, Adam.
Too right, we will. We'll be in better spirits. We'll be up and about after the holidays. We'll be ready to rock and roll. So, from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and it's been good to be back as two regular teachers.